ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Remember during COVID when you couldn't go anywhere and just how frustrating that was? Well, in the Gulf Country in North Queensland, in places like Doomadgee, it's been like that for months, cut off in all directions, from weather event after weather event. Hello, I'm Megan Hughes. Understandably, the prolonged isolation is taking a toll on these remote communities. Troy Fraser is the CEO of the Doomadgee Aboriginal Shire Council. He tells Zara Margolis they've been cut off since the start of the year.
So pretty early January when the first bit of rain came. Yeah, we've been isolated since then, and unfortunately with us, as everyone knows, that we're bounded by two rivers, so the Nickerson and the Gregory. That really puts us in a position because both are fast-flown and big systems, and they come from two different catchments. So, yeah, going on just over 3 months now.
And when you say isolated, so that means all roads are closed?
Absolutely, all roads are closed, yeah.
And that impacts not just locals getting in and out. That, I would imagine, you know, goods, post, all that.
Everything, yeah. So anything that comes in by road or goes out by road impacts us, so we rely heavily on air at the moment and the reliability of wrecks, but also through district disaster, who've been enormous for us this year and last year, I say, just to make sure that all our major areas are supplied with goods.
How has wrecks been? Have they been fairly reliable in being able to get you those
goods?
Yeah,
mate, they've had a few. Not so much. Like, they've had a few issues there. I'm hoping that they've ironed those issues out.
Were the issues just delays or not coming when it was planned?
Just time changes, that's all. Yeah.
Is that annoying considering, I mean, you need to be able to rely on them, especially when they're the only way to get things in and out in a wet season?
Yeah, it is. It is annoying, especially with catching other flights as well. So obviously people move around. Not only us, we rely on air transport during these times, and especially if you're connecting through, it can become quite costly for people.
How are supplies going in town?
Mate, good at the moment. Obviously, we... It's not as good as if we had the roads open, but look, we're getting a lot of help off the district disaster management group in Mount Isa, and they've been, like I said, they've been enormous for us.
How do you think locals are handling it?
Oh, mate, I think frustrated now. I think we've seen enough water. People are really frustrated because we can't move around, and I suppose that connection to country, a lot of people to get back on the country is very limited at the moment.
Yeah, I didn't consider that because you're still on country there, but that ability to go and move about freely, does that have a very big spiritual impact?
Yeah, and mental impact as well, just getting back on country. It certainly has, especially for larger family groups and especially those that are connected to the coastline and further out, so the north of us where we can't access at the moment. Then you've got the connection between Doomadgee and the Budanga community. So we've got families here that are stuck that can't get back over there, and I think for us it's that it hasn't been one isolated system. So we've seen the impact of four cyclones this year. We've seen the river go down. We've seen the river come up. We've seen it go down again. So it's just repetitive. And now I'm sitting beside the river here at the crossing, and it's back up again. But from all visuals here, it's receding slowly.
How long until roads might reopen, provided there isn't another system?
That's a hard one because we haven't got eyesight on the movement of Gregory. I'm hoping that late next week, if we don't get any more rain, but to cross it, probably another couple of weeks before we can cross this one. Gregory is another issue. We can only see levels on it. We can't see the movement, and we don't know what's happening upstream. So
it could still be weeks.
Yeah, it could still be weeks. Yeah, it could be anywhere between 1 week, 2 weeks to 4 weeks.
Yeah, Troy Fraser, you've lived in the Gulf more or less your entire life. Is this one of the bigger wet seasons that you've experienced?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest ones. Yeah, I've seen wet seasons we had before that have been isolated, but the amount of water that's going past Doomadgee from these four events, it's just enormous, you know. And you can see it's taking its toll, and like I said, on community at the moment.
I know last year a lot of locals were telling us that they were getting pretty annoyed at the shops regarding supplies, but also the prices of things, which are pretty exorbitant at the best of times. How's that going?
Two issues there. One is the supply of thing. I think we've, like I said, with the DDMG, I'm pretty sure we're on top of it. We're looking at another plane just to keep stocks uploaded. With the pricing, we've still got a lot of bit of work through that. Obviously, there's been that cost of living inquiry and summit up Thursday Island, so we're hoping some outcomes that are going to be pushed back to remote and regional areas to ensure that the cost of living, and our biggest thing is just the cost of living going up, and we don't have industry for people to have jobs to be able to combat that either. You know, we've seen electricity go up, we've seen the prices of goods go up, and unfortunately, what happens in these smaller areas, because you don't have industry, you can't actually combat that.
What would you like to see come out of that, or in terms of that?
My wish list is a bridge, but obviously that's going to cost a bit of money. But look, I think overall, if the government can help us look at these solutions to be able to look at combating, and it's not only during the wet season. You know, we got to look at the cost of living right throughout that 365 days a year for people. And you hear it in, I've been looking on campaigns of other communities and other towns, and part of their campaigning is the cost of living. So, you know, everyone's feeling the pain at the moment. For me, it's looking at how do we invest funds to be able to look at the way that we fund the transportation so that the cost of that doesn't impact. Because if you're looking at a piece of tub of butter or tub of margarine that's $5 up there, how close can you get it to $5 up here? For me, that's the challenge we need to look at. We need to look at that middle movement between somewhere like Brisbane where you're purchasing it from to when I pay it across the counter. So what are those costs incurred between that? That's what we need to be addressing.
Troy Fraser, so 3 months isolated now and maybe a few more weeks yet. Hopefully it'll get back to normal soon.
Yes. I'm pretty sure it will, but it's going to take a little bit of time, that's all. And yeah, I think our biggest challenge is to make sure that we keep the goods on the shelf for people.
That was Troy Fraser, the CEO of the Doomadgee Aboriginal Shire Council. Meanwhile, on the east coast in the Daintree in far north Queensland, recovery is continuing on farms after they were inundated in December. Backpackers have answered the call to action, volunteering with BlazeAid, as they can use it to apply for a second year on their working holiday visas. Peter Provost is the BlazeAid coordinator on the ground. He's also joined by a couple of backpackers. He tells Charlie McKillop what they're tackling.
Today we're off to, first thing up, we're backpackers are going to milk a cow, two cows, and then we're going to help that farmer put in some wooden posts and straighten up some fencing. And there's actually some work from the small flooding we had on the weekend, so we've got to remove some rubble and, yeah, just stuff like that.
The challenge continues, and the weather is certainly continuing to throw some curveballs. But you and BlazeAid, Peter, are offering experiences that don't necessarily come in your average holiday brochure, do they?
Yeah, that's true. You can get out there in the mud and get your feet wet, and it's hard work, like it is, and particularly with the weather up here, as you know, being a local, with the humidity and it's hot. And but yeah, no, there were. We've got six backpackers here at the moment. We've got another six coming on Monday, and they're all enjoying it. They're having a great time, yeah, and they're working really hard.
Now, the way that the working holidays visa scheme operates in this country has undergone some significant changes in recent times, with the 88-day requirement for those that are looking to apply for a second year of their working holiday. Kind of relaxed to some extent, that it's not specifically tied to farm work or to smaller regional centres anymore. But you, how has that impacted on people willing to sign up with BlazeAid? Have you had any drop off in numbers?
No, well, as far as I'm aware, just before we came, Daintree was approved as a postcode for the visas, so. We've got lots of inquiries from backpackers, like almost to the point where I could take some more, but might have to start turning some away because there's lots and lots of backpackers wanting to come.
How fantastic is that? So they're willing to volunteer their time, rack up their 88 days, and earn some extra time in Australia. I just wonder, have you got a couple of workers handy that might be able to give our listeners an insight to what that experience has offered them?
Yeah, I do. I've got Nora from Germany and Ashley from North Carolina. So I shall put Nora on.
Righto, throw him on. G'day, Nora.
Thanks, yeah.
Hello.
Hey, Nora. I just understand that you're about to start work, so I won't hold you up too much. But I'm just wondering, when you come to Australia as a working holiday maker, you're obviously ready to get stuck in, but did you ever expect that you'd be in the midst of milking cows and rebuilding fences on flood-stricken farms in the Daintree?
Not really, no. I expected some farm work, but I didn't expect to be building fences in the rainforest. But it's really cool here, so I'm enjoying it.
What's it been like, and how much of an appreciation are you gaining for what's happened to the communities where you're working?
It's been very cool. I've been learning a lot, not just about building fences, but also just I've seen a lot of nature here. I see a lot of animals crawling around that are really cool and I don't see back home. And just, I don't know, just the views are really beautiful and the farmers are always really, really grateful for our work. And it's just very fun to work with them and for them. And it's a great experience.
Now, Ashley comes from North Carolina. I wonder if you've ever encountered humidity like the type that you're working in the Daintree there?
Some days, but not on a regular basis like I do here.
What kind of stories are you going to have when you get home?
My favorite would probably be swimming in waterfalls after work. We finish a day building fences and then one of the farmers had a waterfall on his property and he was kind enough to let us go for a swim and cool off after a long day.
Oh, yeah. I think locals can understand the experience you're talking about there, which is an experience that really, unless you were involved in the way that you are, you wouldn't get to have. How much do you get a sense of what you're actually contributing here to communities that have been hit so hard?
It's definitely hard to fully comprehend because there are like such a vast like group of people who are affected by it. And it feels like I'm just here to like just kind of work a little bit. But then you talk to the farmers and you hear their full story. And you can just see when you talk to them, like how grateful they are that we're here. And we're helping them get that first step to start getting back on their feet after the devastation.
That's Ashley, who is a backpacker from North Carolina, along with Nora, who is from Germany, and Peter Provost, who is the Blaze Aid coordinator on the ground in the Daintree, speaking to Charlie MacKillop. If you'd like to explore even further what it takes to put food on plates around the world, join me, Callie Buchanan, and our team of specialist reporters from across Queensland as we break down the big issues of rural life. From the food you eat to the clothes you wear and the home you live in. It's all available for you on the ABC Listen app. Just favourite the Queensland Country Hour or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.